From KCRW, this is DNA Design and Architecture. I'm Frances Anderton. Right now, there is an epidemic of loneliness, and the pandemic is making it worse. A co-living project is trying to remedy it.
I think Treehouse is, in this moment, we're actually seeing the beauty of what Treehouse is. And that's when you're in proximity and you know your neighbor, you can be supported by your neighbor.
Prophet Walker is one of the creators of Treehouse. This is a ground-up co-living building in Hollywood. It has 60 bedrooms organized into 18 suites, each with private bedrooms and shared kitchen and dining. Then there are the community spaces for everyone who lives in the building. A dining hall, a lounge, an art studio, a laundry room, a recording studio, a speakeasy, a two-story library, cafe and rooftop with trees and a treehouse. Treehouse opened last November before anyone imagined a pandemic. And then its premise, living in close proximity with strangers, was put to the test.
I'm happy that I'm at Treehouse because I think about how I would be feeling if I was still living in an apartment by myself, and I'm pretty sure I would be just miserable.
This is Jason Erickson.
I'm also nervous to be living at a place with so many people.
10 months later, Treehouse may stand as a model of community building just when people needed it most. We'll hear that story in a moment. First, let's take you to the building. On a residential street, you will find a five-story building with projecting distressed wood balconies, decks, and an outside staircase with a tree on top. The feeling is urban with a rustic quality. Enter at the ground level and you find yourself in a lobby area with a bar and a sofa and a cello.
And when you walk into Treehouse, I wanted people to be greeted with potentially someone who lives there would give you a coffee. You could hang around the coffee bar like Central Perk from Friends.
This is Sean Nibb. He is the creative director at Treehouse.
And that the cello was there because there's hello in cello. Hello, cello. And little childlike stories and moments like that are part of my contribution to the project.
Yes, Treehouse has a creative director, and that is because everything about the design is highly intentional, with spatial planning to create social encounters and interiors and landscaping to give a sense of place. Jeff Soler was the architect.
So you're sort of linking from the lobby, which is the major public space on the ground floor. You're always forced to go through that. Then you go up through this exterior stair and these walkways that become front porches for the units. So everyone's always kind of, you know, doors are left open. People are able to then interact on this sort of porch area. And then as you move through, you get to the library. That's a two-level space. And as you continue to make your way up, you then come to the dining hall, which is another major common space. And that's got a 25-foot tree there, and the tree house is on that level. And then you kind of wend around and climb your way up and find yourself on this basically forest up on the roof. And you've got these amazing views of downtown and the hills. So, you know, we're fortunate to sort of have this great view property. But the circulation really is the heart of it.
Circulation was very important, but so too was the organization within the suites. Soler helped figure out the balance of group space against privacy and personal control. So, for example, each private bedroom comes with its own bathroom and thermal control. Sean Nibb brought the sense of place to all those spaces.
I wanted to do a design that was very eclectic. Eclecticism through multiple materials and the use of multiple variations in materials to invoke a diverse landscape, and that landscape would be people. And I started with that idea in mind and then used the different surfaces and lights and chairs to invoke an eclectic background, and that everyone who potentially was living in Treehouse basically came at it with this big global view, and they traveled all over the world, and they brought these bits and pieces and artifacts back from these travels and created this living space. And that living space reflected all of the people of the world. And that's what I was trying to do. And then that's what got me the project.
Well, that's so interesting. So you were sort of storytelling in a way.
Yes.
So it's like a piece of production design almost. And then you wound up doing the landscape because the place is called Treehouse. Tell us the landscape side of the design that you drew up for them.
I believe it came down to how can the gardener, myself being the gardener, create a layered environment that would feel organic and grow quite quickly and not use a tremendous amount of water and be on a very, very hot rooftop in Hollywood. So three things came to mind. We need an olive tree. We need a pepper tree, a California pepper tree to be exact. And we need a California live oak. And create a gardenscape that was layered and that felt completely wild and overgrown, and letting the grasses take over, letting vines commingle, letting your standard ornamentals spill over and use geraniums and use all the things that you would find in and around meadows or the edges of, you know, a forest. And those types of plants are the ones that usually are ramblers and kind of bridge the divide between the plains and the wooded forest, and paint the gardens on the roof with that kind of material. And I guess the reason I tend to not do big high-end gardens anymore is because it's too restrictive. People have always wanted specific English, French, formal, this and that. And over the years, I found that freedom for me and the Treehouse Project comes in creating gardens or spaces, even interiors, that are commingled, where everything comes together and layers on top of each other, and that there are really no more rules.
Was all of that because you were trying to create for this community that was coming together in this kind of artificial way, but what one wants to end up in is a place that doesn't feel artificial? Is that what you're trying to do with the landscape?
It's a response to the location. And I think nothing feels as good as being in a garden that feels wild and lush and rambling in a city that you look out on and is very urban, gridded, and void of greenery. And so the intent was to just make it feel magical in a way that you were just in this rooftop meadow, but it really is a rooftop and it's really carved out and it's very specific, but you feel like there's no boundary. It's just wild and free.
That's Sean Nibb, and before him, architect Jeff Solar. We'll go back to both of them soon to hear what's in the pipeline for the next treehouses. But first, having learned about this careful design, let's hear how it has worked. Adriana Cargill first visited Treehouse in October of last year, and she stayed in touch with several residents through spring of this year. She was interested in how you actually create community. Here's her story.
I was really interested in, like, how do you actually do that? And also, will it work? You know, for me, in my experience, community is something that's really organic, where you just sort of connect with people that you run into a lot, you know? And my neighborhood I live in now, you know, I see people at the coffee shop, or, I mean, I did before COVID, but, you know, like, you have these communal spaces that you frequent in your neighborhood, and then you kind of get to know people in this very, what I would say is unplanned, unintentional way, but the Treehouse proposition is extremely planned. Like, they have premeditated how they want to bring people physically together to then bring them into a community. So I was at this launch party, and the first tenant that I met was named Jason Erickson.
I've lived in LA for only a couple years. And actually, part of the reason why I looked into co-living and community in the first place is because I was having trouble finding and building community.
I kind of noticed him like moving through the crowd. Seemed like he didn't really know anybody, but he was definitely kind of like excited to be there. But he was also a little nervous, and here's what he had to say.
I like the friction of multiple people having to occupy the same space, because I've lived by myself for 4 years in a basically frictionless living situation, and I felt my social life kind of atrophy, and I've felt it's just too easy. It was too comfortable and too nice to not have that kind of regular rubbing shoulders with people.
So that's Jason Erickson. And at that same launch party, I ended up talking with two of the founders, Prophet Walker and Joe Green. Something that's sort of interesting is that, you know, when Joe and Prophet got together, they weren't actually looking to start a real estate company. What they wanted to create in their company and together was something that facilitates community. And then they decided that creating a co-living apartment building was the way they wanted to do that. So they kind of worked backwards. Here's Joe Green.
We're like the first generations, ours maybe the one before, that have like tried to go at it alone. It's literally the thing that humans evolved to do that differentiated us from all the other animals out there, is we knew how to work together and be in these groups. And that's our natural state.
So Joe says that really, yes, we will hope to make money off of this, but really the primary goal here is to fight today's epidemic of loneliness.
It's a sad thing about America, and in many ways even more particularly about Los Angeles, which is that wealth buys you isolation, right? In America, like the more money you get, the further away you live from other people. The bigger your house, the bigger your yard. And we know that the farther people live apart, the longer their commute, the less happy they are.
So Joe Green is a Harvard grad who helped Mark Zuckerberg start Facebook. And then there's Prophet Walker, who has a background in civil engineering and real estate. And he grew up in Watts in the Tufts Nickerson Gardens housing project, which, if you're not from Los Angeles, it's one of the most notorious housing projects in the city. And he grew up there during the crack epidemic.
In the midst of that, what kept me sane, what kept me grounded, is that I had a beautiful supportive community around me. And we wrapped our arms around one another if someone passed away. You saw people hold each other. We're in the middle of the streets. We interacted. We had grandmothers who would scream at the kids to be quiet and go in the house if she felt it was too late for people to be outside. And all of that, like, just community love. Poverty in those days necessitated community. It necessitated human interaction.
Prophet got into a lot of trouble during his teen years. And at age 16, he wound up in prison.
What I thought would be one of the most darkest moments and how would I ever survive turned out to be this interesting moment of realizing that human spirit and resilience persists even in the darkest of places, but only through community. And so many times we shared meals together, we shared laughs together. And if you strip away the physical walls and the implications of what it is to be a prisoner, what you saw are humans struggling through a moment and interacting with each other.
You know, this loneliness issue is wrapped up in a whole bunch of stuff. I spoke with a woman named Diana Lind, and she's an expert in urban policy, and she's a writer based in Philadelphia. And she's been working on this book called Brave New Home, Our Future in Smarter, Simpler, Happier Housing. And she said this shift towards single family housing and people living alone really started after World War I.
Back in, you know, centuries ago, people in the United States used to live in a variety of different types of housing situations. Most people lived with extended families, boarders. People lived in taverns or boarding houses, apartment houses, SROs, all these different types of housing types. Then, starting with post-World War I, there became this, you know, great shift towards single-family housing and a focus on everyone living individually. Now, I think there are a lot of different demographic shifts that are occurring, that people are, both whether by choice or by force, returning to a lot of these housing types that had been popular before.
That was Diana Lind talking to Adriana Cargill. I'm Frances Anderton. You're listening to DNA, and we're talking about the co-living space, Treehouse. So, Adriana, Treehouse is born. It seems to hit a lot of buttons for today's community. It's an affordable place to live, at least somewhat affordable. It's got cool design. People are keen to move in. They're even willing to put themselves through what is quite an unusual application process to be accepted into this community. And then the unexpected happens. Let's hear the rest of your story.
You know, in how Treehouse is trying to build community, there's two things they're doing. One is the careful design of the building. And then the other one is how they're sort of curating their community. And I want to emphasize that they actually, you know, they're still governed by California laws, and so they can't actually reject anybody. But the actual sort of process of applying, I think, might filter anyone out who isn't really about this community building mission that they have. And it really starts with the application. And so on the application, you know, they ask questions like, please talk about a community cause that you're a part of and or care about, or tell us about a time when you helped a friend. So yeah, I also met Jade Brandes. She's in her early 30s. She's got a background in film production. And she told me that she was working at a WeWork, and that made her kind of curious about co-living. And I know that she was a little bit nervous about moving into a suite with so many people, but she really liked the flatmate agreement. And so that's, once you're accepted, once you move in, then you do an agreement with your roommates. And here's Jade talking about it.
Because I've never lived in a space with four other roommates. I mean, this is brand new for me. It's a lot of people in a small space. But being very, very detailed and with the logistics, such as, you know, how many times do you throw out the sponge a week, or, you know, which space in the fridge do you want? I mean, really trying to make sure that none of those logistical items get in the way of community.
You know, I met Jade and Jason in October at that launch party, and then they actually moved in early December. And so probably about mid-December, I came and visited them. And I'll have to say, you know, they both had just like shiny, sparkling stars in their eyes.
It's a different take on neighbor. You know, we're not just asking for someone to water your plants. I mean, we've really become more than just a community. You know, we've become a family, and that's what it feels like. So it's, in that sense, it's exceeded my expectations.
And I met both of them in this entrance area. And what the Treehouse co-founders have done here is they actually turn it into this really beautiful lounge space. There's all these hanging plants and these pots and different artwork all over the wall. And there's this huge kind of coffee bar, but it's not to be confused with one you have to pay for.
We've all become like pour over people now. Like, no, we all learned how to do pour over, and so now that's our thing, I guess, is we like get up in the morning and make pour over coffee for each other, and it's fun.
Another part of the building that the residents spend time in is the rooftop. This is also the place where they have Sunday night community dinners. Where Treehouse, you know, pays for the cost of food, the residents cook it, and everybody just sort of hangs out, and it's this great kind of community building event. So as part of just checking in with Jade and Jason, I went back in early March for a Sunday night dinner, and you know, it seemed pretty normal.
Jade, the paleo pasta is somewhere.
Where is it?
I think it's in the middle.
Is it the spirals?
It's in the middle. Right,
is it the spirals?
Yeah, it's the spirals.
Plus, there's really only two people that are paleo, and they made entire dishes for us. Like, these are the little things that mean so much.
You know, there was like 40 people there. Everybody was like kind of Italian themed. And so there was all this pasta and red sauce, pizza, and just music playing. And you wouldn't know that coronavirus was happening in the background. And Jason and some of his friends, when I was there, were talking about going to Disneyland.
We just checked in with each other today. Like, are we still cool with going to? Yeah, I'm definitely going to Disneyland. Okay, we'll be fine.
And then, of course, this totally new reality set in on March 15th.
California preparing for the same pandemic spread as New York.
Anybody who thinks that they're going to be spared, this virus can literally kill anyone.
That's when all non-essential businesses were closed. So social distancing, shelter in place, national parks closed, beaches closed, all bars, restaurants, non-essential businesses closed. So, of course, I wanted to check in with Jason and see what was going on at Treehouse. So on April 1st, I gave him a call.
3 weeks ago, I went to Disneyland. That idea sounds insane to me now. I've almost forgotten it exists, you know, because it's just so part of this life that I don't live now.
By now, he's self-quarantining his room, he's having food delivered, and he's only leaving to walk his dog. And on the one hand, Jason's happy that he's at Treehouse because he feels like if he did get sick, there's a community of people around him. But really, on the other hand, he also felt nervous.
I'm happy that I'm at Treehouse because I'm trying to imagine how I would be feeling if I was still living in an apartment by myself. And I'm pretty sure I would be just miserable. Like, I'm pretty sure my mood would be totally unsalvageable. I'm also nervous to be living at a place with so many people and with people who live so many different lives, and I can't control them.
Jade, she actually left altogether. She left Treehouse to go spend some time with her family in Orange County, her blood family. And the day after she got there, she decided that she was going to stay. And by stay, I mean leave Treehouse entirely and leave Los Angeles entirely. So I gave her a call to understand why she'd made that decision.
That decision was not easy to make. I didn't, and when I say that, it's because I didn't want to leave home. You know, not just the physical space, but my roommates had become my family. The Treehouse community had become my family.
And actually, her roommate, Myra, has a pretty opposite reaction.
I feel like everybody's kind of just chilling and connecting and talking to each other, sharing stuff, playing around. We have virtual games and stuff like that. So I think everybody's pretty chill.
And then one resident, Elizabeth, who's from Australia, she's helping other community members by tutoring. And she's actually tutoring the daughter of a woman who lives there who's a nurse and is gone a lot of the time.
Elizabeth actually tutors Violetta probably about 3-4 hours a day.
You know, for Prophet Walker, who actually lives in the building, and he lives in the building with his 14-year-old daughter, all of these different people playing virtual games and tutoring each other's kids, you know, this was really proof of concept of Treehouse.
I think Treehouse is, in this moment, we're actually seeing the beauty of what Treehouse is. And that's when you're in proximity and you know your neighbor, you can be supported by your neighbor.
That was Prophet Walker talking with Adriana Cargill about Treehouse. So, as far as the owners are concerned, this is just the start. New treehouses are coming down the pipeline. They'll be on commercial boulevards, some of them, meaning there will likely be retail or other businesses on the ground floor. And that may mean further curation by the owners. Meanwhile, Jeff Sola, architect, and Sean Nibb, creative director, are busy adapting lessons learned from this one to buildings that will start construction soon. For example, they found that people wanted more space within the suites for unplanned hanging out together, instead of so many large shared spaces with defined activities attached to them. They also found that Treehouse had attracted a particular kind of tenant, says Sola.
There happens to be a lot of serious chefs there, and so they have definitely, you know, I think they're pushing for a little more punching up of the kitchen space. So I think it's, you know, it's a little bit of an experiment, but we took a definite attitude early, knowing that we were going to do more of these and that, you know, we'd kind of wanted to see in a laboratory setting, like how this would work. And it seems to be working relatively well, but I think we could probably, you know, in the future, we might go with slightly larger kitchens because that's some of the feedback we've been getting.
This is architect Jeff Sola. He's working on a new treehouse in Koreatown, and he says that two others are in negotiation. So, COVID notwithstanding, people are clearly seeking this kind of community.
I think in a sort of contrarian view, you know, three of the women who work for me, you know, are in their late 20s, early 30s, and, you know, so they're living alone. And I think during this, you know, what I've seen is that they essentially have a built-in community at Treehouse that is essentially quarantining together, and they still get to have a life. They get to have a social experience. And I think they've built enough trust over there. I think Treehouse has been able, you know, as far as I know, they have not had any issues with COVID. And they've had, you know, they have their full group of people who are still able to have a life. And where I do worry about, you know, people in their 30s living by themselves in this time especially, I think are suffering much more.
That's Jeff Sola. And everybody that we have spoken to who is involved with this project has reflected on what it means to actually try and create community. I went back to Sean Nibb to find out what he thought of the basic premise of Treehouse.
I think it's great. I mean, my partner is Danish, South African and Danish. And, you know, that idea has been around for some time in Northern Europe and even in Germany. And I think it's, you know, it's kind of the only way to go given what we're being faced with. And I think the idea of living together and learning from one another, and especially when you're young, and specifically, I was worried when the pandemic came and we were, you know, isolated. And I realized that for myself personally, we went to a place called Three Rivers, to a friend's place, and we created this little micro community there. You know, I found my treehouse by going to Three Rivers. Treehouse found itself by being this thing we created, I think, at the right time for the right reason. And I am so happy to be a part of that and, you know, at least continue, hopefully, to create tons of these for people to enjoy. I'm from Jamaica, and you have these, not vertical, but they're more, you know, rural, but you have community. And in America, it's harder.
So, Sean, you just mentioned your Jamaican roots and the community that's there. My sense is that the kind of community you're talking about might be a mix of perhaps extended families and also a wider community that's mutually supportive. America, money sort of drives even your choices about where you live. You know, the more money people make, the more isolated they'll become. What can America do to be less lonely?
I just did an art exhibit at Henry Taylor's gallery, and I am going to break it down to this because this is the best way that I can speak. I speak through images and through objects. I made Weber grills all over the world, some in marble, one in marble, one in water hyacinth, and one in lacquer. And my take on it is that we've been so programmed to try to go for this ideal, this unattainable life. And the Weber grill is a great way to signify the bullshit that America has stood for and that has been perpetuated. And people need to realize that living in suburbia and working your ass off to grill is like not the way to go. The way to go is to say, wait a minute, I need to come back to my town, my barber, the barman, my neighbor, my purveyor, like I need to get small. And like Venice isn't anything great. I've lived here most of my life in America, but there's kind of like, it's kind of like a small place. I can walk down the street and everybody knows who I am and my kids. My kids can go to the park and Mr. Fernando, who looks like a gangster and probably was, knows the boys, and I know that they're safe. And like the familiarity between the connection of everybody from high to low, and that everyone's looking out for each other, is something that you get in a third world country, Jamaica. And I shouldn't say third world, I'm sorry, but I'm 51, I think I can say that. And in Denmark, the same thing, everybody's looking out for each other. And if I'm gonna work all day to go out to grill in my Weber grill in suburbia, no one's looking out for me. And that's kind of sums it up. It's like, we don't want a Weber grill. We want to know that my neighbor is looking out for me and vice versa. And that's kind of how I would sum it up. And that's how I am summing it up.
Sean Nibb is the creative director of Treehouse. He's designed many gardens and places in LA, including the Line Hotel in Koreatown. He and his partner Stella Schwinder also own and run Flower Boy Coffee Bar and Gallery on Lincoln Boulevard in Venice. I'm Frances Anderton. If you want to listen to more DNA reports on KCRW about design, architecture, and planning, subscribe to the DNA newsletter. You can find it at kcrw.com/newsletters. Thank you for listening to the DNA podcast. Stay tuned and stay well.